going to move into item number six, migratory bird hunting regulations, enclosures, briefing, public hearing. There was no public input, by the way, on item number five. And Don, take it over. I was up to Wings Over Washington last week, Don. It's a Blaine does it. It's a birding festival. But the golden eye were really in good color.
Oh, yeah? Arrows? Yeah. Or
both, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair Smith, members of the commission. I'm Don Craigie, waterfowl section manager with the Game Division of the Wildlife Program. And we'll be talking about two different WACs today. First one is the migratory bird hunting seasons for 2016-17. I just want to review real quickly the authorities for migratory bird hunting seasons. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is the ultimate authority for migratory bird seasons, and they set the federal frameworks each year. And the frameworks include the earliest opening date, the latest closing date, limits, and season length. And then states are given the discretion within WACs to be more restrictive than the federal frameworks, but not more liberal. And also we can set season timing within the outside dates and some other aspects too. There's been a big change in the federal regulatory process starting with this year. You recall last August, we established the 2015-16 seasons, and that's been the case for many, many years, that we have one meeting after we got the data from the July surveys, waterfowl surveys, and we'd have our meetings in late July, and then the commission would act in typically early August to set the waterfowl seasons. Well, the Fish and Wildlife Service developed an environmental impact statement on sport hunting several years ago, and one of the proposals was to try to change the process to get some more public input and allow more time between when the regulations are set and when they're actually going into effect. There was some concern about not being able to get everything through the federal solicitor's office in time in some years. So beginning with this year, the federal regulatory process combined the early and late season rulemaking and adjusted the timing to allow for more public review. So essentially, the draft frameworks were developed last fall, right after our August meeting, actually, for the 2016-17 seasons. And so everything's set almost a year in advance. And it's based on, over the years, we've developed harvest management models that have been very good at predicting population trends, considering a lot of different factors. So using those models, we're able to use those long-term trends and predict population size and productivity based on a bunch of different factors. So the service, you might think, well, if you're not using current year data, potentially you could get more conservative because there's a lot more unknowns, but the service has assured the states that the new process won't result in more conservative regs or emergency regulation changes. So we're hoping that'll play out. As a result, though, our WAC 232-28-436 includes proposals for all the migratory bird seasons. It used to be we had Bantail pigeons, mourning doves, and early Canada goose seasons in the separate WAC, which was considered at this meeting and the April meeting, and then as I mentioned, the other ones were in August. So now everything's combined into one WAC. That's the proposal, and it allows us to consolidate our rulemaking process, but and more public review. But I think a big benefit to this is we get our pamphlet out much earlier than we have in the past for waterfowl. So there's typically, after the August meeting, we'd go to press, and then it would be just a few weeks before the season started in September. But now we're shooting for a press date in June. So that's going to be a big benefit, I think. Anyway, this kind of outlines the schedule. The flyway meetings in August and September are actually for the next year now. The Service Regulations Committee meets in October, and then our state season selections are due in late April. That's for framework changes. The non-framework, March and April commission meeting. So I wanted to give you a rundown on the population status, and if this looks familiar, a lot of it I presented in August, but it's the basis for our season proposals again. And we have three different North American mallard stocks: Western, Mid-Continent, Eastern mallards. Used to be that all mallards were managed as one stock, but over the years we've evolved to manage them separately, which is a benefit for us to be able to manage our harvest based on our specific populations. And last year, habitat conditions were good compared to previous year, a little bit worse than 2014, but everything has been really positive on the habitat front for waterfowl the last several years. And that's resulted in record counts on total ducks and mallards. Those are both records in 2015. And early signs are that habitat conditions are not quite as good as last year on the Canadian prairies and some other areas due to lower snowpack. But we're still looking for a good carryover on the breeding stock for this coming year. And pintail canvas back in SCOP, we've had similar estimates in 2015 to the year before. These seasons for these species are based on independent harvest strategies and, again, population harvest management models. There's a new a national duck hunter survey that will be coming out this year. We'll be asking about hunter preferences for these species in these seasons. So based on that, we might look at some alterations in the future on how we set these seasons based on hunter input. As far as our Washington breeding duck surveys, the mallard trend 2014 to 15 was pretty much the same and a little bit above the 2010 through 14 average. So we reconfigured our breeding surveys in 2010, and this shows you the trend since that time. So as I mentioned, the Western mallards are managed separately. We did have some declines last year in the Western Mallard Index, 11% down from the year before, and then down about 28% from the long-term average. But this is a lot of this is due to the drought in California, which seems to be moderating somewhat this year. In addition, we've had some better water conditions in our areas in Oregon and BC. So it's looking a little better for our wetlands for breeding populations this year. So the good news this year is after several years of effort, our surveys in Washington and also British Columbia are going to be considered in this Western Mallard model. That was just approved by the Pacific Flyway Council this week. And hopefully it should be approved by the Fish and Wildlife Service in the next few weeks. I would say, I think it's in June actually that they consider that, but I don't see any problems with that. And so for Western mallards, we're in the liberal package based on the population trends in the model. And so the prescription for 2016-17 is another liberal season, 107-day season. And based on a liberal package and the game management plan, we set our seasons as late as possible, 107 days as late as possible, with a total bag limit of 7. Mallard bag limit of 7 and hen mallard bag limit of 2. So basically we're just looking for at calendar date adjustments for the duck seasons for the coming year. You can see them there, 107 days, 2-day youth hunt, 105-day general season, and then the 7 duck bag limit with 2 hen mallards, 2 pintails, 2 redhead canvasback, and 3 scop. And then our restrictive sea duck limits, 2 scoters, 2 longtails, 2 goldeneye, and 1 harlequin. There is one minor recommended adjustment on page 3 of your notebook, just corrects the years listed for the WAC up to 2016-17. As far as the goose population status and season proposals, a lot of good news again on the goose front, just kind of like for ducks. Our Canada goose numbers increased in eastern Washington 14% in 2015 compared to 2014, and they're up about 32% from the long-term average. In western Washington, up 7% and from 2014 and up 40% from the long-term average. That shows you eastern Washington on the top and western on the bottom. Wrangell Island snow geese, I reported this last year, but we had a very high number recorded on the breeding surveys on Wrangell Island last summer, up to 240,000, which was a big surprise for everybody involved. It looked like there had been some immigration into that colony. It's kind of an unusual occurrence. The management range for this flock is 50 to 70,000 in the Skagit-Fraser. And we just completed a revising the harvest strategy through the flyway earlier this month, and we should be able to provide some more opportunity on these birds in 2017-18 because the current estimate for the Fraser Skagit is 81,000. So it's above our 50 to 70,000 range. We'll probably be looking at increased bag limit and potentially shifting the season later into February or March. That's another thing we can do to increase harvest. So getting input on that. As far as the Brant in the Skagit area, this is very restricted season because of the presence of a kind of a limited stock of Brant, the Western High Arctic Brant or Gray-Bellied Brant. And we've had some recent decline starting in about 2009 in the wintering numbers. You can see here on the graph, upper graph, that decline. We did get a little bit of an increase this year up to 5,000. And we're able to implement the three-day restrictive season option this past winter, which was a new thing we was implemented last year. The bottom graph there shows potentially some of the reasons for declines in Washington, and that Alaska's wintering population of Brant has been increasing dramatically over the last 10 years, up to about 50,000 birds, which is almost a third of the whole population. Dusky Canada geese have had excellent production the last few years. In 2015, their numbers were up over 17,000. And this is a record high count from when the surveys were started in 1986. Cackling Canada geese, these geese also occur mainly in southwest Washington, just like dusk geese. Had an increase 21% in 2015 compared to 2014. And again, this is the highest count since that survey started in 1985. So things are pretty good in the goose world too, as well as ducks. We're proposing similar seasons to last year in our in four of our management areas, 1, 3, 4, and 5. We are proposing to standardize most of the Canada goose season bag limits to 5 per day. Some of them had been at 3, so we're trying to simplify and standardize that throughout the state. There is one recommended adjustment on page 11 of your notebook, which would change the possession limit for eastern Washington September goose season from 15 to 10. So that's just a two-day season, and so therefore the possession limit needs to be 10 versus 15. Just a clarification there. Some of the biggest changes we have for this year are for the Southwest. Yep.
The areas. What's the reason for the fragmentation of the various areas?
What's the reason for the
why is 5 all over the place?
Oh, okay. So goose management area 1 was established primarily for snow geese, and that's the main snow goose wintering area in the state. Area 2A and 2B, I'll cover that a little more in detail. Southwest Washington, that's where the dusky Canada goose areas are. And then everything else is just primarily hunting of western Canada geese, the resident, and some migrants. But and then on the east side, the Columbia Basin, this has been established for a long time, but we have different regulations in that area 4. It's 3 days per week. It's primarily a migrant geese, a lot of lesser geese from Alaska, versus some of the, in area 5, it's mostly resident geese. So it's mainly based on species that occur in those areas. So as far as the Southwest goose season proposals, we had quite a few changes last year, if you recall. We closed our hunter check stations, closed the season on Canada geese, and we had, in conjunction with Oregon, major restructuring of the season. So mainly because of the dusky Canada goose, which breeds in south central Alaska at the Copper River Delta, winters in Washington and Oregon. So our objectives for last year were to maintain the dusky Canada goose abundance, distribution, and winter survival. We wanted to try to maximize the length and timing of the goose season to help with depredation concerns. A lot of those depredation concerns occur later in the season period. So essentially this time of year, and even into April, May, although we can only hunt through March 10th through the federal framework. We tried to back up the season as far as we can to help with those depredation concerns. In addition, closing the check stations help us reduce agency costs. And also we're trying to reduce complexity of the regulations and the hunter reporting requirements through by eliminating the need to go to check stations. So our season just closed last week. So we're still putting together some of the data from that season. But I think in general we can say that most of the changes were well received by hunters and landowners as far as eliminating the check station requirement and shifting the season later seemed to help with from the landowner concerns especially. We did have many fewer hunters and geese checked compared to last year. So it's a lot, found it a little more difficult to try to track down hunters in the field versus having them come to check stations. There was some confusion about the late season areas, which were open and closed, private versus public land. So we have a change this year to address that. We had 10 permits invalidated. So these are people that took dusky Canada geese to get their permits invalidated, compared to a typical average of about 20 or so. And just as a reminder, the continuation of the season is dependent on the dusky index and estimates of survival. So we'll be getting those this summer and should be able to tell if potentially there's any impact on the dusky population from these changes. So I wanted to get into the specific goose season proposals contained in the WAC. So we're proposing to combine areas 2A and 2B into one area, which would be area 2. If you recall the map I showed earlier, there were two distinct areas, so now this would be one area. And some of the changes within area 2 would be that we'd standardize the seasons. We could allow Canada geese in the youth hunt bag limit, which they haven't been before. We would have a 9-day September season with two weekends, a 9-day October season, which would start concurrent with the duck season with two weekends, and the remainder of the days would be late November through early March, again to help with depredation concerns. As far as the late season, previously we had it, it was closed on public lands, and we wanted to change that to be more specific and say National Wildlife Refuges and Department Wildlife Areas. There was some confusion on what exactly is public land as far as, you know, rivers, and, you know, there was seemed like there'd be much better to have a more defined boundary, so that's where we're headed. And this would be more consistent with Oregon, how they approach their season. So anyway, the changes, the rationale is to reduce the complexity and, again, maximize the length and timing of the goose season to address depredation concern. We did have a fair amount of, I'd say a fair amount, five or six people asked for a longer season as far as number of days per week. We hunt 3 days per week right now, and they wanted to see a 7 day a week hunting in this area. We want to be able to monitor the season effectively, and we think that by keeping it 3 days a week, that allows us to do that. And it's a budget issue as well as we hire temporary to help with the field monitoring. So we'd like to keep it the same for this year. That could be something we could look at in the future, though, as we get a little more experience with the season. And as far as the other migratory birds, these were used to be in a different WAC, but left their band-tailed pigeons and mourning doves are two other migratory game birds. They're managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as us. But here's the trends for band-tailed pigeons on the Pacific coast. Fairly stable trend for band-tails and also for mourning doves here on the right. And it has been fairly stable trends for those. And we're proposing the same seasons as last year for those species. The second WAC that we're recommending an amendment to is 232-16-740, which is the Columbia Snake and Yakima River Waterfowl Coot and Snipe closures. If you recall, last year we had a large amount of WACs we went through and tried to clean up all of our game reserves, closures, shotgun shell restriction areas, so forth. This one just came in late. It was pointed out by the Corps of Engineers and that Section 6 on the Snake River, the navigation marker that was listed in the WAC was incorrect, so we'd be changing that from 4 to 5, minor change there to have a correct description for that. So that's about all I got, so I welcome any questions.
Thanks, John. Questions from the commission?
Yes.
Great presentation. I always enjoy the video that you show us from the Fish and Wildlife Service. So where is that?
I'm not sure what the status is going to be on that with the new cycle, because they have to show the last year's trends, and I haven't heard if they're really going to continue that. I have a feeling it might drop. Unfortunately, I enjoyed it too, but
yeah.
And you showed the banded pigeon and the mourning dove. Now Eurasian doves, there's no season on those, right?
Well, it's classified as a deleterious, so it can be hunted year round. I'm sorry, predatory. It can be hunted year round with a hunting license, and they can be trapped for falconry and bird training. The same as a rock dove, so it's essentially the same classification of the rock dove.
Are you seeing quite an are their population growing on those Eurasian doves?
Yeah, they definitely. It's been amazing how much they've increased over the years and how much they've spread. New areas, I've heard them. It seems like they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Now, they've actually spread up even to southeast Alaska. So
well, that's funny because you'd see a few in Clarkston, mm-hmm. and then they started showing up, and there's quite a lot of them riding around my house already. I'm kind of going, huh.
Once you hear them, you can start hearing them everywhere.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, did that answer your question? Okay. Don, do you have any data on waterfowl hunters? I mean, is it the number going up, down?
It's actually, in our state, it's been pretty flat. So the migratory bird permit sales has been fairly flat. I'd say in the Pacific Flyway, there have been some declines, and nationwide, definitely some declines, depending on the area, some more than others. But ours has been fairly stable.
Well, the good news is the populations look pretty healthy.
Yeah.
That's like the take is pretty hefty too. I mean, that's
a lot of recreation,
a lot of freezer food. Yes.
If I understood you, I was just curious why our Washington mallard breeding survey has not been included in the Western mallard count previously.
Well, we had a long-term survey that I think it started in the 50s, actually. It was a ground-based survey. As the Western mallard model got established in 2008, 2009, it became apparent that we needed to change our methods to be more consistent with Oregon, California, Alaska. So it's an aerial transect survey is what they were using. So we had to switch from our ground survey to that. And so it took a few years to get enough data to include it. So we only have five. It was it's pretty good that we got it in now. They could have asked us to wait longer, but we were able to make the case that to put it in now. So ours and our BC's counts too.
Anything else? Thanks, Don. Very good.
Okay.
And there's no public input on that as well. We'll move to